Hey, thanks for having me on. It's a real honor.
Well, first, in your book, you differentiate between liberals and progressives. What's the difference here?
So I think it's best to explain that by first explaining an analogy with the political right. So you have a difference between conservatives and libertarians. And both sides, conservatives and libertarians, both want economic freedom. They want the market to be as unregulated as possible. The difference between conservatives and libertarians is that the conservatives are social authoritarian and that they want to control outcomes in regard to drugs, into sexual behavior, into personal morality. Whereas libertarians say, hey, we don't want the market or social lives regulated. Now, if you take that analogy and apply it to the left, both sides on the left want market outcomes controlled. That's why we have unions. That's why we have stricter regulation, usually under governments that lean to the left. If you think of like Bill Clinton and Tony Blair, these are kind of like the prototypical examples of members of the liberal side of the left. Progressives, however, take it a step further, and they want to regulate social behavior, but not in the same way the conservatives do. They're not interested in drugs and sex. They're interested in, can you own a plastic bag? Can you put salt in your food? Can you put trans fats in your food? What kind of car can you drive? So if you think of like Seattle politics or San Francisco politics or Mayor Bloomberg in New York, these are more of the progressive sort of mindset.
Now, your book focuses on the progressives, and why did you feel it was necessary to write a book about progressive anti-science instead of conservative anti-science?
Well, it's the market's already flooded with conservative anti-science books, and if you read science journalism, they are very critical of conservatives, and I think rightfully so, because of their views on evolution and global warming. However, what's kind of swept under the rug is when the left is also anti-science. That hasn't been traditionally addressed, and it hasn't been traditionally covered in science journalism. And we thought we wanted to fix that problem, kind of correct the imbalance in the coverage by exposing the people on the left. And by doing so, we're not endorsing or siding with the right. We're just simply saying, hey, if we're going to criticize the right, let's criticize the left as well.
You categorize unscientific progressive ideas into four categories, and one of them is the everything natural is good category. Could you kind of give us some examples of some of these beliefs?
Sure. So organic food, the whole kind of whole foods model of food production, which is if nature has produced it, it's automatically good for you, and if man has messed with it through genetic modification or through pesticides or something along that matter, it's bad for you, it's not healthy. That's simply untrue. And it also ignores the rather obvious point that arsenic is natural, and that's not good for you, and neither are rattlesnakes. And so this idea that natural is good is this myth that seems to exist among the public, chiefly among the members of the left, and it's simply not supported by any scientific data. There's a new study which came out a couple of months ago, maybe a month ago, which surveyed 40 years' worth of data comparing organic foods to conventional food, and they found essentially no meaningful differences in nutrition between organic food and conventional food. So that cheaper apple at Kroger's, at the grocery store, is just the same for you as the, you know, three times as expensive apple in the organic aisle.
Now, one of the highlights of your book is the anti-vaccination movement. How did this movement start, and is there really any science to support it?
No, not at all. The medical community has never accepted this controversy. I guess you should say quote-unquote controversy. There has never been a link established among the medical community between vaccines and autism. The 1998 paper by Andrew Wakefield, which suggested a link, was found to be fraudulent 13 years later. But even if that hadn't been the case, by 2002, a massive study out of Denmark, which studied 530,000 children, showed no link between vaccines and autism. And so this link has always been never considered legitimate among the medical community. It's only been among political pundits and among the culture, predominantly among the left. So one of the loudest voices was Robert F. Kennedy Jr., and he wrote a piece for Rolling Stone magazine, which was also run by Salon. And in it, he said that vaccines were linked to autism. But this was definitively untrue when he wrote that. And most disturbingly, people like President Obama, even when he was running for office in 2008, said there could be a link between vaccines and autism. Now, to be fair to President Obama, so did John McCain, so did Hillary Clinton. They both said something along those lines. And this idea that vaccines are unhealthy has spread even to the far right. You know, if you listen to libertarians, they say that government should not force you to get vaccines. It's your choice. Michelle Bachmann made some comments about mental illness and vaccines. And so this idea has spread beyond the left, but in our opinion, it was definitely first embraced and perpetuated by the left.
We're talking with Alex Birzo. He's the author of Science Left Behind. If you have questions or comments for Alex Birzo, send us your comments at comments@krcu.org, and we'll get those back to Alex and get his take on your opinions. Now, a really interesting topic is the use of antibiotics in animal feed. This science shows that it is a dangerous practice, but neither President Obama or President Bush really did a whole lot about this.
Yeah, that's right. And that is the one point that I will concede to the organic food movement. They are correct about this, that using antibiotics in animal feed is a horrible idea. I majored in microbiology, got my PhD in microbiology as well. It's literally like day one, they teach you, don't give antibiotics to animals, okay, unless they really need it. It is textbook microbiology. And the Bush administration essentially ignored it. There were proposed regulations, but a lot of angry farmers spoke out against it, and he shut down regulations. To President Obama's credit, he did implement some regulations, but not nearly what we need to see done. There is one microbiologist in Congress, a Democrat from New York, and she said that this was just kind of a plodding half measure, that, you know, this is a nice first step, but we really need to take 20 more steps to actually solve this problem. And the reason this is a problem is because when you use antibiotics all willy-nilly without really thinking about it, it spreads antibiotic resistance among bacteria in animals, which then will eventually affect the bacteria which live in humans.
Well, let's move from antibiotics to alternative energy for a little while, because this is definitely a politically charged scientific question and political question. But really, what does the science say here about solar and wind energy? Is there really hope there that is science that can become that can you know replace fossil fuels eventually?
Eventually, yes. Today, no. And that is what my co-author and I believe. We are both very pro-solar power, but we are pro-solar power for the future, because the technology that exists right now simply isn't that efficient at converting the sun's light into electricity. It's just the technology just doesn't work that well. And the technologies that do work sort of well are way too expensive. There's no way that we could actually implement this on a national scale. So what my co-author and I endorse would be to continue funding further research in solar power, but not doing what President Obama did, which was subsidizing solar panel companies directly, because we see that's gambling. You know, we saw that with Solyndra and a couple of other companies that he did that with, and then they went bankrupt. So what we endorse would be to invest very strongly in basic research at universities, and then once the technology is ready to go to market, maybe in 20 years, maybe in 30 years, back off and let it compete in the marketplace by itself. Now, in regard to wind power is a decent idea, and really, yes, eventually we should be able to replace fossil fuels, but we take a very pragmatic and realistic approach that we can't do it today.
Well, let's talk a little bit about hydraulic fracturing or fracking. This is obviously political divisive, but I mean, who's on the right side of science here?
I think the correct side would be to proceed and to proceed with caution. Some studies seem to indicate that water can be maybe contaminated a little bit, but not nearly to the extent that the people on the left say that it is, because people on the left are saying crazy things like that fracking is causing cancer and that we're all going to, you know, be poisoned by these chemicals in the fracking process. That hasn't been borne out to be true. So I would say that we should proceed carefully. There's also been some concern that it might trigger some earthquakes. That is true. It does trigger minor earthquakes if there is a nearby fault line, but that it's not true if there is no nearby fault line. So if you can do fracking in a place that doesn't have a fault, then theoretically there shouldn't be any earthquakes. It's a much safer procedure. We've been doing it since the 1940s, I believe. So So this is a procedure that has been around for about 70 years. The only reason it's getting play in the news now is because natural gas companies are getting really good at doing it, and it's becoming more and more and more widespread. And so that's why it's a controversy now, but quite literally we've been doing it for 70 years.
Now, how have conservatives, Alex, how have they become known as kind of the anti-science party instead of the progressives?
Well, they have taken very vocal anti-science positions on two very important topics. One is on the teaching of evolution in schools, and the second one is on global warming. Now, scientists, if you were to poll biologists, you would get pretty much 100% support of the theory of evolution and its teaching in schools. So when people are opposed to that, they're opposed to that on purely anti-scientific grounds. In regard to global warming, I think it's okay to be dubious or skeptical of policy, to say, well, I don't know if we want to implement cap and trade, or I don't know if we want to implement a carbon tax. That may not be the best solution. But to be skeptical of the science itself, that the planet is warming and that humans are largely the cause, does go against the scientific consensus. And I know that upsets a lot of people, but that is what is the scientific consensus. And, you know, I think that it's best to follow scientific consensus. And so being vocally and very loudly opposed to that, I mean, you know, prominent Republicans have been opposed to both of those positions, makes the Republican Party and conservatives not look good. And since journalism already leans to the left as it is, they're going to hammer away at conservatives because of these two topics. And so that's how we think they've become labeled as the anti-science party.
Another big one is genetically modified food. What's the science show us though? I mean, are there health effects that can be derived from consuming genetically modified foods?
No, not at all. The only concern would be perhaps if a gene from a plant which triggers allergies or something was transferred into a plant that you would eat. But companies and businesses and universities are well aware of this. Regulators, the EPA, the FDA, the USDA, they're all aware of that problem. And so we do not generally take genes from plants which cause allergies and transfer them to other plants. That is really the only potential problem, and it's a well-known problem, and people and scientists do not do that. Other than that, the idea that genetically modified organisms is causing any health problems at all is simply not supported by the science. And I know a lot of people say, well, you know, Monsanto doesn't care about people's health, and Monsanto is just doing this without regard for the health of the planet or for people. And I always respond that we have three huge government bureaucracies that oversee this process: the USDA, the Department of Agriculture, the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, and the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency. They are monitoring this process. They make sure that each of these plants, you know, are safe, and that you can't plant them and feed them to people if they're not safe. And so if we have these government regulators, who I think for the most part do a decent job overseeing this process, and they have given it the thumbs up, and we've been doing this process for about 20 years or so without any noticeable health effects, you know, people should calm down. We're okay. And combine that with the fact that when you go to the grocery store, about 75% of the food in the grocery store contains at least one genetically modified ingredient. That's because most of the corn that we use in this country, most of the soy that we use in this country, is genetically modified. And most food contains cornstarch or some type of soy product, and yet we're all living healthier, longer lives without any noticeable side effects. And so I think it's something that people are hyped up about for no good reason.
How much is this also just the science education and Americans not having a real firm grasp on science, and by extension, our political leaders not having a real broad knowledge of science either?
I think that's an extremely good point, and perhaps best demonstrated by your who could have been Senator Todd Akin from Missouri. Maybe he needs to go back to school a little bit and learn a little bit about biology, but I think you're absolutely right. One of the things that was, I think, very concerning for scientists is that the autism and vaccine connection, that story was reported mostly by general beat journalists. It was not covered by health journalists and science journalists. And so when you have people who are not trained in science, who are reporting about science, you would expect that that reporting may not be the best that it could be. And so we need to have more science journalists, more scientifically trained people in the community of journalists. And as you pointed out, we need to increase our science standards. We need to have better science standards in K-12 education.
Alex Bierzo is the editor of the website Real Clear Science. He's also the co-author of Science Left Behind, Feel-Good Fallacies and the Rise of the Anti-Scientific Left. Alex, thank you so much for your time.
Hey, it's been a real pleasure. Thank you.